When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's poppin', everybody? Hello and welcome to Popcorn Culture. My name is Ben Carlin and I am your host. Here with me today is my brother Jay, who will be in every episode.
That's me, brother Ben, here back again for another excellent episode of The Pop.
Do you think we'll talk about something really cool and splendid today?
I mean, I feel like we usually do. I feel like we will certainly, my prediction is that at some point we'll start talking about a thing we plan to talk about and then immediately veer left into uncharted waters.
And yeah, that's almost exclusively and absolutely how right. The show works at exactly. All times and always. So yeah. We don't even know where it's going to go.
Right?
That's part of the fun of it. Speaking of, yeah. I actually think that there's like an interesting social phenomenon that will apply nicely to the exact example that I'm going to give, which is the movie The Social Network.
Yeah. Okay.
Which is the story of like a young Harvard Mark Zuckerberg in the process of inventing Facebook,
social media,
yeah. And of course the movie very famously has like Jesse Eisenberg, and he is going up against
the Winklevoss twins,
yes. And I feel like throughout the course of the movie, you're sort of like Mark Zuckerberg, at least the depiction, you know, in the film is certainly like one of these like house type of people, like House MD, the TV show. Yeah, like where it's like clearly brilliant, but also probably like difficult to talk to,
right?
Maybe
socially inept,
maybe, yeah. But like at the same rate, tell me if you disagree. I feel like you are still kind of like rooting for him versus the Winklevi twins, who are like, you know, big and muscular, and they row crew, and you know, like. There's two of them.
Yeah, it is an interesting like setup for the movie, because especially at least when the movie came out, Facebook was like very, very popular, and like yes. Like I was on it all the time. Whereas like interesting, like if it came out today, I'd be curious as to what my relationship with it would be, because like I don't get on Facebook almost at all. Like I think my picture on Facebook has been unchanged for like 5 years. It's a picture of me holding Luke and we have matching Hawaiian shirts on, and it's like from before the twins were born.
Oh wow.
So you know, like that's how long it's been since I've updated it. I think my cover photo features the whole family as we are now, but that might be getting a little outdated as well. But yes, when the movie came out, it was like Facebook was extremely popular. I probably checked it like, you know, 15 times a day.
Right, right. Yes.
And I thought of it as like a really good and cool thing.
Yeah, no, of course. And so that's sort of the thing. It's like you are watching like this thing that in the moment as of release was such a phenomenon like out there in the real world. And so you're sort of like, yeah, like Facebook, and like, you know, he's doing it on his own from his dorm room, and like, you know, the big famous, you know, like legacy Harvard students
it's weird because they present it like it's this sort of dorky, inept guy who's not very good at anything and has never had like anything handed to him, against these guys who have just had like their whole life laid out ahead of them and they've never wanted for anything or whatever. But like also they're all at Harvard. So it's like no one's really, you know, scraping by, I don't think.
They're all probably destined for a nice measure of opportunity, if nothing else.
And then it's like they go through the whole situation. You sort of feel bad for Mark the whole time as the movie's unfolding. But like at the same rate, it's not like the his enemies, the Winklevoss twins, don't have a little bit of a point. Like they're not necessarily wrong.
Well, so here's where the quandary I was going to pose for you, because I think it's so interesting, is in the real world, the Winklevoss twins are in fact real people. And they did end up winning a settlement, like, you know, with Facebook or Mark Zuckerberg or whatever, where they were awarded some hundreds of millions of dollars or something like that, which they then invested in a app called Coinbase,
right?
Which is basically like probably the premier consumer market for cryptocurrency,
right?
And for at least a beat there in like 2020, 2021, when like the crypto market was just going absolutely like berserk, and like the numbers were, you know, I don't know, it was just ridiculous, like how much value everything had all at once. You know, it's interesting to me because you've got like this idea of like Mark Zuckerberg being like this innovator, and he was able to understand like what was going to make Facebook cool, and like to not have ads included on Facebook and to have it be exclusive, and you have to have like that dot, you know, Harvard.
Yeah, like, you know, the .edu or like, whatever.
There's all these, like, you know, like whatever. It's like, he's got it figured out. And so the thing I keep thinking about, though, because I for whatever reason, I just find this endlessly fascinating. And I think cryptocurrency as a conversation itself is just interesting, just to speculate. Like even whenever I talk about it here on The Pop, the thing I'm really hoping for is just marking what my perception of it was at different phases of time.
Oh, sure. So you can like go back.
So like 50 years from now, it'll be like, what did I say? What did I think?
Yeah.
Like, was I close? Yeah. You know, like circling the same thing with like AI. It's like,
oh man, you know, who knows what's on that front.
Right. You could have any conversation about it. And it's like I heard somebody talking, I think it was John and Hank Green were talking about AI the other day. And they were like, right now, some people are making predictions. Some people will be right just because something will happen. And it's like, it's not that they're any more accredited or have any more weight or any more like knowledge about what could happen. It's just something will happen.
Right.
So someone's predictions will be right, but almost everybody's predicted just about everything we can think up.
Right.
But so interestingly, like, yeah, that's the thing with The Social Network that I think is really fascinating, is like at the end of that movie, you sort of kind of see it as like Mark, I don't even know if wins is really the right word. Like, he's being sued for a lot of money, and he's like hitting refresh on like a friend request, and he's kind of alone. So it's like, the movie's not necessarily like celebrating him like across the board, or even failing to acknowledge the shortcomings of the way that he like navigated those waters. But the thing that I think is interesting is that like, if you're to fast forward like 10, 20, 50 years or something, and cryptocurrency ends up being a big deal, it seems like there's a greater likelihood that while the Winklevoss twins like lost that fight, they would have like ultimately won the war or something.
Oh, right. Like,
you know, like they would go on to like surpass, like it is hard to imagine surpassing Facebook's ability, like, you know, net worth.
Right. Yeah.
You know, but I mean, like,
it's huge.
Right. Yeah. And somehow it's like, they may have still figured out the thing that would go on to do it.
Right. Like, yeah. Like, what if they had actually just won and assumed control of Facebook? Then, you know, how would that have changed anything else?
I have no idea.
Yeah. Right.
I have no idea. And it also occurs to me as we're talking about this, I know that we've talked about Facebook so many times here on The Pop, and I'm like, why is it so interesting to me? It's like, I can't tell if it's because it's like an empire that I've watched literally rise from nothing into it at its best. And now we're almost on like the tail end of, not even on the tail end, just like on the other end of its peak.
Right.
And you're like, oh, this is interesting.
Or are we? Who knows?
Will it be the case that like Gen Z is also just like, man, you know what's awesome? You know what my parents think they're too cool for? Facebook.
No, it's definitely not going to be Gen Z, but it could be like Gen Alpha or something.
The next one.
Yeah. You know, right now, like, you know, it's like we were that like targeted demographic for when it was emerging. And you're right. Like, it's so weird because like you know, you give Mark Zuckerberg so much credit for like inventing it and being the guy there. But it's like, if he didn't, like, it does feel inevitable that Facebook exists. Like, maybe it's not always called Facebook, but like social media was coming. Well, you know, like there is no way almost around it. You know, it's not like, oh, if Mark wasn't here, imagine if he just hadn't made Facebook, then like we wouldn't even have social media. Would we have Twitter? It's like we'd have different versions of all those things.
Sure.
But like it would all still exist. Like it would all still happen.
Yeah.
Like MySpace happened and Friendster happened. Like the building blocks were there. Someone was getting there.
Yeah. I mean, social media did already exist before Facebook did.
Yeah.
Like I was already on MySpace when I first heard about Facebook.
Right.
So it's like, you know, like this was becoming a thing in some capacity.
Yeah.
It was just a question of like where it would ultimately end up going. But like, similarly, I just heard somebody say the other day that like we made the vinyl record version of an episode of The Pop for like one of our exclusive quarterly merch things.
Yes.
And like, that was kind of fun because it's like, ooh, like a vinyl record, you know, it's like, that's so like vintage or old school.
Yeah.
Or like such a analog version of music. And I heard somebody tell me the other day that they were like, you know, like cassette tapes are making a bit of a comeback at this point in time. And I'm like, cassette tapes, huh? Like the small little bricks of plastic. Like,
yeah,
they seem so much less cool to me than vinyl. But like, I wonder if like, if like our parents are like, you know, you guys might glamorize vinyl more than we do. Like,
right,
you know, like,
yeah,
we grew up with vinyl. Like, we don't see it as like a, like, you know, an unbelievably cool thing because it was just like we watched it like rise and fall.
Right. Like there was vinyl and then it got replaced because better things came out and those were tapes. And then the tapes got replaced because CDs came out. And then the CDs were replaced because digital came out.
It's, yes,
like what, like, yeah, like, yeah, maybe there wasn't, maybe these things are, if they were better, they wouldn't have been replaced, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so it'll just be interesting to see like if cassette tapes end up having like another round of like being in vogue, followed by like compact discs again, and it's
right,
just like, oh, fashion, man, all of a sudden,
right,
it's gonna be like,
yeah,
it's like oh my gosh, like I have a shiny CD, like it's like I installed a CD player, I found a vintage one, installed it in my car just,
oh,
so I could have,
gosh,
it.
Oh my gosh, what would be like the vintage CDs that you would want to own that could suddenly like be valuable? Like I feel like immediately what comes to mind, and I don't know why, is like Britney Spears CDs.
Britney Spears definitely,
yeah,
seems
for
like,
sure. Like,
yeah,
I just like, she had like such like iconic, like I don't know, CD covers all the time.
Who sold the most CDs?
Oh,
would be an interesting question.
That is such an interesting question.
Yeah.
Like,
is that a Googleable?
I wonder
how quickly,
yeah,
we can find out. Okay.
Because like you'd have people who were coming out and were popular like as CDs got popular and you'd think it would be them, but then you have like really famous bands like the Beatles or something, which, you know, must have also sold a bazillion CDs just because people wanted to hear their music on this new format, right?
Right, yes.
Oh,
okay,
man, this is a very interesting question. It feels like it would have to be like a 90s star.
It does feel like that. And this is the thing, like I'm seeing like a list of best-selling music artists of all time.
Right.
And it's confusing because it's like, are you just saying like on the basis of whatever platform they were using to distribute music at that time, or is this accounting for CDs? Because I said CDs and it does show up as the Beatles.
Interesting. Yeah.
As being, yeah, like the top most, followed by Michael Jackson and Elvis Presley.
Okay. I mean, those are all very big contenders, obviously.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. We'd go without saying that all of those would be in the conversation, followed by Queen, Madonna, the Rolling Stones, Pink Floyd, Frank Sinatra, Elton John, and Led Zeppelin to round off the top 10.
Okay.
Eminem in 11th place, which,
wow,
I was like, wow, that's pretty impressive.
Man. Okay. All of these people are obviously big contenders for it, but yeah, that is interesting. Yeah. Like who would have, yeah. Okay. I wonder if that is just the answer. It's just the Beatles. The Beatles sold the most.
Right. But then the other question would be, okay, so then if you sold the most CDs, it would also mean that there were the most of them in circulation, therefore making them also probably less rare.
Right. Yeah.
You know, which is another one.
So you need someone who's like really popular, but like didn't have tons out there.
Or became extremely popular, like had an album. So like for example, for whatever reason, Green Day popped into my head because I think it was the first CD I ever remember like taking out of the case from Dad's collection, putting,
yeah,
in the CD player and like listening to. It was Green Day's Dookie.
Yeah.
But I wonder if it would be the case where it would be somebody who had a CD that came out while CDs would have been the primary mechanism for listening to music, but then gained even more fame after the era of CDs and into MP3s.
Oh.
Because then they could have an iconic album that maybe didn't sell that well on CD, so there's fewer in circulation overall.
Okay, you know who'd be a great one for this is, I think, because of, I think Kate Bush.
Yes. Because of Stranger Things, right? So that's a great example of one, because then it would become a piece of Stranger Things memorabilia.
Right, yeah, Running Up That Hill by Kate Bush would be a great example of this, because she would have been popular in the 80s, so certainly there would have been CDs made of her music,
right?
But she would have been a little past, this is all me guessing, I have no idea about Kate Bush's discography or anything.
Sure.
I am guessing that she would have been like past her peak in the 90s, but here in 2022-23, as of Stranger Things coming out, would have had this massive resurgence in popularity, and thus the rarity to own an original one of her CDs would be, it like today that still worked, it'd would be so, would be pretty cool.
It'd be so limited.
If you own one, let us know.
Yes, that would be very interesting. Yeah. For whatever reason, I am just positively obsessed with this concept. Like I like, even growing up, I remember like everybody talking about like the 69, the iconic 69 Mustang, you know, from Ford. And it was like, it's like, that's like the ultimate car collectors, and probably not. This is probably, I'm sure, like more vanilla if you were to get into like true gritty car collectors. But like, people recognize the significance of that particular model year car.
Yeah.
And I remember growing up and like seeing all the cars around me and thinking like, well, there's no way in the world like this thing, our mom's Dodge Sport minivan, mm-hmm. is going to go on to be like some kind of like iconic, you know, like the Volkswagen Bug. The bus is what I'm thinking of.
Okay, yeah.
Do you know those, like, they kind of have like a flat nose from?
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like at some point in time when it came out, it like maybe it was just like a minivan, but then like eventually it became like a total like collector's edition, and like then it became like special and important, and like then like therefore like valuable.
Yeah.
Along the way. And so yeah, like, you know, like in the early 2000s or whatever, like, you know, I might look around and be like, oh yeah, you think someday somebody's gonna want that Subaru Forester over there, like an 04 Forester? And fast forward to the year 2023, and I literally in the past week have Googled specifically looking for this like Subaru was making for this period of time. So the Forester, in case you're unaware, is like, it's like a hatchback, similar to like a RAV4 or like a Honda CRV. Like our grandmother drove one. They're not exactly the type of like sports car that you would like covet. In the same way as you would like the 69 Mustang, which is like, you know, the beginning of American muscle cars, and
right.
has this really cool body shape, and it's the, you know, the Mustang logo itself is just really cool, and all the rest. Did you look up a Forester?
No, I was looking up I was trying to find the minivan we had growing up.
Oh, okay.
And I wasn't sure exactly what the actual like model and year number on it was.
Okay.
Do you know?
I don't know. I can't remember what year it would have been.
I want to say it was, my guess is that it was, I thought it was like a Chrysler minivan 95 Sport.
Yeah, I would have said a 94.
94. Because I remember it had like the stripe on the side.
The stripe, the pin stripe.
Yeah, pin stripe, you know.
You got to pay extra for that.
Well, for sure. You know, you want to be like the cool mom or whatever. Yeah, I have no idea. We'd have to ask mom so you can look that up.
I know.
But yeah, fun fact about that car is that we had that car, like that was, we had this like white minivan growing up that was that we drove around in forever until I think like 2001, and it finally got replaced by like it just got updated to this like candy apple red minivan that had the DVD player that we watched so
the
many movies
one.
In.
Yes,
the
yes,
infamous
yes.
one. Yeah, that one. But before that there was the white one, and I remember like we'd gotten rid of it and we'd replaced it with the red one, and then my wife Beth, her first car that she drove to you know, high school every day was the same minivan that we used to own.
It blew my mind seeing
like
it
was like no way. You'd get in, it had the same seats, and it was like, whoa, this is like stepping into the past. That was so
wild.
Yeah, so her family had the same minivan and they had just not replaced it yet, and so that was so weird that was like the Beth drove the same car that we used to have.
It was a sign.
It was was a sign.
It was a sign.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. But yeah, so anyway, back to my Forrester, because I just think this is endlessly, I think it's interesting. But so there was like this period of time where Subaru was making the Forrester, where they were literally putting one of their sports car engines into the Forrester.
Okay.
So very, very randomly, it was the Forrester, and it was the XT trim.
Okay.
Is what it was. And the XT stood for turbo.
Oh, gotcha.
Because it literally had a turbo in it, and it was a manual, and it could do 0 to 60 in like sub 5 seconds.
So
it was like a total sleeper car. Like if you were to pull up to it like in a traffic light or something and have like one of those like little like, you like, know, around, you'd be like, oh yeah, like, you know, look at this thing, a little hatchback. And then it would like, it could totally book it.
It could totally zoom.
Which I am personally obsessed with. Like I love the idea of a car that doesn't look fast, that is fast.
Yeah.
Yeah, even though I don't personally drive fast anyway, but my first car was a manual, and so like as I've gotten older, it's like one of these things. Like I desperately like want to go back to having a manual, just because I just think it's that much more like, fun to drive and everything. And anyway, so my long story long is that I was on the hunt, and I was like, you know what, this is going to be perfect. I'll just go back and buy like an old Subaru Forester from like the early, you know, the first,
yeah,
I don't know, like 2005, 2006 or whatever. And they have totally become collector's editions. And it's like, they are expensive and they are sold at a surplus. And it's like, are you kidding me? Like, you know, it's like,
right. Like, it's like in the moment, clearly someone was trying to be experimental and saying like, what if we just had like a much more like every man's kind of car, but we put a turbo in it, so it was like more appealing,
right,
or
right,
something.
Yes.
And they were like, yeah, let's give that a shot. And like, my guess is it didn't catch on in a big way, but since time has passed, it did catch on with like a very niche audience. And those people
want it, like it's in
the fullness of time, like a large number of people now want that exact like thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep, absolutely. And yeah. I think you hit the nail absolutely on the head. They were probably like, how can we like get people a little bit more excited about this car? And it's like, make it fast.
Just
see like what happens. Yeah. So if you've ever seen like a WRX, like STI, it's like, it would have been the car I would have wanted as like a high school age student. It had like a huge spoiler on the back, and a big hood scoop and all the rest, but they're like rally cars.
Dude, being a teenage driver, I feel like was like a whole different world of driving.
Yeah.
Like because the world like was just different.
Cause you take everything in so differently.
I think you just took everything in so differently, like all the time. Like anytime I had anyone else in the car, I was always really concerned that they were like judging the speed of my driving or were upset that I wasn't like taking the fastest route or like, I don't know. Like it felt like there was a lot of pressure to be like a really good driver, like in a very specific, not being a good driver kind of way.
Right. Yeah. Like you should be by 16 to get your license. By 17, if you aren't meant to be on like a racetrack,
right?
Like, what are you even doing?
Right.
With yourself?
Like, this is what's expected. Like, you should. Yeah. So I remember that. Like, I remember one time, driving around with Beth. So like for like my senior year in high school and for a while after, the car I had was a 325i BMW.
Yes.
And like when I would like pull up at stoplights and stuff, like the amount of times someone would look over at me and like it was on. Was frequent, you know, like it was like, oh, okay. There's this one particular traffic light next to the country store gas station near where we grew up.
I know the exact one.
And there are two lanes, and those two lanes, after you go through the light, continue to be two lanes for about a quarter mile. At which point, the right lane turns off either into an industrial park, or else you have to merge into the left lane.
Yeah.
And so there's like this. And almost anyone, no one is ever turning into the industrial park, right? Like never, unless you work there, which is nobody.
Yeah.
Like I'm not even sure I've ever seen anyone walk into that building. So everyone in the right lane is always trying to get over into the left lane. If you're in the left lane, you are either going to get passed by the person on the right or they're going to have to get behind you.
Yep.
And this spot more than ever was like, people just sort of like knew that about this spot.
It seemed like it.
And it seemed like it happened all the time, not just there, but at like lots of street lights, where it was like, okay, we got up, like someone's coming off this line and gonna try and get in front of the other person. And I remember getting up next, like being at that exact light one time, and Beth was sitting in the car next to me. I was like, the person next to us wants to race. And she was like, what? And I'm like, it's happening. and she's like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, watch. And like, sure enough, the other person just like, vroom, like took off from the line right there. And it was, I was like, man, does that like, you know, it blew my mind because this was not part of her experience at all. Like she had never once like noticed someone wanting to speed past or like was never engaged in it. But it was like the amount of unspoken things between me and the other cars were like nonstop. It felt like,
oh yeah, no, I mean, yeah. I've thought the exact same thing. Like it also, as you were even telling this story, I was like, I wonder how often all it is taking anyone, because this happened so frequently as like a 16, 17, 18 year old kid. And I was like, how often was it the case that like I was turning and making eye contact with a fellow driver, and all it took for some other human being to want in was that like head turn. And it's like, you know, hand on the wheel and you like look over and it's just like, it's on.
But like, yeah, it just seemed like it just was like, that was a reality that was happening.
But and this like, doesn't happen in my life.
But
now,
it doesn't
ever,
happen now. Ever. I know yeah. This is, I'm like, was it happening or was I just making this up? Or like, you know, was I filling in a lot of blanks in my head that were not there?
Right.
But then it also felt like, or was I like, yeah, like make, or was I like manifesting it in some fashion by like, you're rightly like turning your head over and checking, like if you like know, like I don't want this person to pass me. And so you like look over and like see if they're paying attention. Was that like enough to prompt them to be like, oh, okay, well, all right, I am going to pass you now or something.
Oh yeah.
Like what nonverbal communication was happening that was making this happen?
That's what I'm saying. It's like, is this spark like secretly hiding and like all anybody wants at any point in time is for somebody like, want to race?
Yeah, I know. Like, because you're right. It doesn't happen at all.
None.
In my personal, like never. This does not happen. And I'm like, yeah, so the question is, you're right. Were we prompting people into racing or was it not happening at all?
Yeah. Honestly, in this exact same spot that you were describing, I do remember one night in particular where this happened, and it was I was in the left lane. So I basically was just going to be able to drive straight the whole time. And the guy was in like a huge lifted like truck with like the exhaust that comes out of the truck bed and like blows black smoke. I think it was a diesel. But I remember it was nighttime and same thing, you know, sort of like came off the line. And like, I used to always describe these as like the 35 mile an hour race, because I think really at the end of the day, for the most part, like I was never actually going to go like ripping through like a neighborhood at like breakneck speed or something like that. You know, because I do think that there was probably like some like limit or whatever there. But I do remember that, yeah, the guy was in the right and he basically was like right next to me all the way up until that industrial park turn that you were talking about. And then he came and like came ripping past me to come from the right like turn lane into my left lane, so that it was like, then you're just on like a two-way road. And coming in the opposite direction was a cop.
Wow.
And that cop literally, because it's a huge area, because like huge trucks pull into the industrial park.
Yeah.
So it's a big wide area. That cop literally did a Fast and the Furious 180, like drift turn, lights on, ripping at us. And I was like, well, that's it.
Man.
It's like, I will never drive a car again. And then the truck saw it. And so he just immediately, like a next right turn, just books it like through like a park, like a gravel parking lot, and goes like scraping off into like this.
Like he fled.
What? And I was like, I don't know what's going to happen here. I don't know what's going to happen here. And so
it seems like that behavior would prompt the cop to follow him,
which is what happened.
Yeah. Yep.
And I was like, oh my God. So that might be like the end of the line for me. It was just like, it was like, okay, I was too close. I was too close. Like I flew too close to the sun and almost got burned. So I'm just going to go ahead and settle into cruise control.
Yeah. Like that's it. Okay. We survived and that was it. Okay.
Not worth ever chancing that ever again.
No, it was not. All right.
Anyway.
Dang. Okay. Can I, while we're on this topic of like whether or not things in the past really happened or if we were making them up.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm in the middle of like a Mandela effect today.
Okay.
Where I am like, it is blowing my mind and I'm like so frustrated because I was looking up something earlier and it was yielding opposite results of what I remembered. And I was like, there's no way. I'm just not finding it.
It's so like, unlike you.
I know. I was like, this is so annoying. Like it is bothering me because I'm like, like my memory is like so surely correct about it, and it's like clearly the search results online are like, no, they're not, like it was different. Okay, so do okay. you remember, let me, in while we were growing up, it was like, it would have been like first, second grade. I'm not even sure if like, you might have even been too young, but I remember being in the library with like my first grade class, I think. Maybe, yeah, the first grade sounds right. I don't know though. And they wanted us to like vote on like one of like four books for like, you know, the best illustration or something like that, or best pictures okay. or something like yep, that. Yep. And of course, everyone just votes on like whatever's the funniest one or whatever's the best story or whatever. But of the four, I remember the one that won was a book called Catzilla. Do okay. you remember Catzilla? It had it by, and so I say pictures in this book. Instead of pictures, it was more like photographs that had been clipped and like put together with like big cat that had like, and then there was like mice that were the one who were, that were the ones fighting Catzilla, and like cat, you know, the cat was really big, and they like drew in like a city landscape, but then had like an actual photo of a cat and actual photos of mice, and had like, you know, manipulated the art so it looked like they had like, you know, were sitting in tanks or were shooting lasers or whatever. You know, sounds like a great book. I know, I can tell you're really, do you remember Catzilla?
I don't know if I do, because, but like what you're describing feels rememberable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I don't know. Did you find Catzilla?
Okay. Well, so because I remember thinking this book sort of stuck with me throughout time, because like as a first grader or whatever, it was so obvious that Catzilla was like the best one that read to us, because it, you know, featured, you know, like a big battle with mice and tanks, and it was so cool. And the other ones were just like regular kids books that had like hand drawn things. It was just, I don't know. It wasn't
wow. They weren't Catzilla. It in much. It
wasn't Catzilla. So I remember it like overwhelmingly, like the entire grade, all the classes all picked Catzilla or whatever. But then like as time went on, like it occurred to me that like it didn't actually end up winning whatever medal or whatever thing it was.
Okay.
Like by, you know, the actual publishing company or whatever. But it occurred to me like looking back that like we as kids thought this was cooler than like the people who were like the actual adults who were voting on it.
Making the decision. Yeah.
And it was always like, maybe it wasn't as cool as like I thought, but I always was like, no. Our opinion, our first grade class opinion of Catzilla was the best one was clearly correct.
Right.
Because
right.
it had lasers and mice driving in tanks, shooting a giant cat. Okay. And amazing.
At the end of the day, it probably should be first graders who are making this decision.
Exactly.
You know, like they're the audience.
But it was like one of those times where it like occurred to be like the target audience clearly liked one thing a lot more than like what actual adults really thought was the best, like, illustrations or images in a book. And so I've always remembered Catzilla for that, because I've looked back and I'm like, maybe we didn't have very good taste as first graders. And now we have someone in the office, Kangaroo Cat, and I will frequently like call her Catzilla.
Okay. Yeah.
It's like, I will say that out loud, and it's like, and it is because of that book.
So you're
in first grade. I am referencing it.
Okay.
Right. Like it is, I have thought about it. It is like popped up in my thoughts periodically throughout my life.
Are you about to tell me that Catzilla doesn't exist?
Ben, let me tell you something. I went to go Google it today, and like it did not pop up. And I was like, there's no way Catzilla isn't real. And there was a different book that looked kind of like it called Cat Kong, and it clearly was like sort of in the same vein, like it had like pictures and like the mice and stuff, and I was like, what is this? And then there was like, I saw another, like it was like Cat Kong, and then there was another book next to it called Dogzilla, and I was like, no. So I looked up Dogzilla, and like Dogzilla is like, it like the dog in question looks very similar to the cat I remember, and it's like clearly, it is so clearly what I'm actually remembering.
Oh
is,
my god!
Is like, this is what it was, but I'm like, it was not Dogzilla, it was Catzilla.
Oh my god!
There is no chance it was always Dogzilla. Dogzilla sounds stupid. Catzilla makes so much more sense. It's fighting mice. What is going on? And it's like, and I'm like, could it have been Cat Kong? Is that what I was remembering? And I'm like, no, I've never even heard of Cat Kong until today. Those words have never existed in my brain together. Like somehow, like, how have I misremembered Dogzilla as Catzilla
I do remember this.
Yes. Do you remember it now, Ben?
Oh my gosh.
Are you looking at Dogzilla versus Catzilla?
It's such a pleasantly derpy little dog.
It's so derpy. The whole thing is derpy. But like, it is like driving me wild today that I'm like, this cannot be. There's no way. There's no way I would misremember Dogzilla as Catzilla my entire life.
This like, is shattering my whole universe right now. I cannot believe I didn't remember this.
Okay, yeah.
Look. Oh my gosh. I can smell the book.
Yeah, sure.
Now that you're saying there's no doubt. It's like, oh, that's weird.
But do you remember it as Dogzilla or Catzilla?
I don't even know.
It
remember these books being there. And
it
feels like the type of thing that the librarian was kind of mad that the school board approved.
Right. It's like they're trying to teach you about like books and stuff. And they want you to like, they put Catzilla there as a test to like see, like to assure themselves that the kids won't vote for it. But then they do. And then it's like, I remember like at every book fair, it was always very prominent because it was like clearly a good selling book.
How
could it not be with a title like Catzilla? How it could not be was that it was actually called Dogzilla. And I'm like, this is just one of those like simulation confirmed. Like there's no, I don't know what to tell you other than like, I cannot fathom how I could have misremembered it my whole life when I liked it so much as a kid and have like thought of it as Catzilla and call somebody in the office Catzilla. And it's not real. Right, it's not there.
It's like the prompting is all, it's also unusual. Yeah. Because the fact that you call Catzilla means that you were literally like making a direct reference to a misremembered piece of your childhood.
Yeah.
Which is very odd.
Yeah. Yes. So anyway, does anyone else remember it actually being Catzilla and not Dogzilla? Or am I like losing my mind over it? I must be because it doesn't exist. I don't know. It's like, I don't know. But also please just go look up Dogzilla because it is like a fever dream of a kid's book that is hilarious.
It is. It's yeah. Really, 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 really odd because like this is, I think I asked you like probably a couple months ago now on the pop actually, when like in Inside Out, like Bing Bong's memory is like erased. It, like the question was almost like if the parents were to show Riley a drawing of Bing Bong, would that like bring it back?
Mm-hmm.
Top of mind, like is there a way to like recall something that's already like fell into the den of like whatever, and this to me feels like a memory orb that was in like the field of all the gray old memory orbs that are like dissolving, and somehow one of the like little jelly beans just like parachuted its way down there and like threw it back up to
yeah
and like threw it in front of the thing. It was like a little dusty, but we remember it.
Yeah we'll keep this one.
I feel like I had Dogzilla in my Batman backpack.
Yeah. Like, you remember Dogzilla?
I must be.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, I feel like I remember the cover of the book.
Yeah.
Clearly is there. This is very strange, though. And it's especially strange coming from you, who I think has such a, like, almost infuriating level of recall.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely. Now it makes me wonder whether or not those pegs were behind our chairs at our childhood home.
Oh. Mm.
You and Mom have had this debate for probably the past.
This is another great example of the Mandela effect. Cause like I remember. Yeah. So there was in our childhood home behind like the whole house had like basically one hallway sort of going through the whole front, like bottom floor where you could open the front door and look directly through the house at the back door.
At the back door, yeah.
Right, like you would walk through and like on the left was the living room and on the right was the TV room. And then you'd cross through an archway and you'd be in the kitchen and you could walk through the kitchen into like the mudroom and the mudroom led to the deck.
Yep.
And like there was like one straight shot. And so as a kid, it was like a very good straight line that you could run from one house to the other.
Oh, so fun.
Yeah, so fun. So fun.
Or scooter.
Or whatever. Bouncy. Oh, we had the bouncy ball thing that
we did.
Yes. Yeah, that was the best. Oh man, I gotta get one of those for the kids. Anyway. I remember like loving being able to like run from one door to the other because just we as brothers would, you know, need a lot of room to sprint around inside the house, cause some mayhem.
That will all the time.
There's
yeah,
no
yeah.
doubt about it. But like hating that there was always like on the left hand wall in the kitchen that there were these pegs that were like for like hanging stuff on, you know, aprons or whatever you might have. And they were right at head level. So it was always like I had to be very careful not to hit the pegs. But Mom assures me that there were never pegs there at all. But I'm like, but I remember the pegs. And I remember why I remembered the pegs, which is because I didn't want to run into them with my head. And they were a constant thing I had to avoid. And it's like, why would I have memories of being annoyed by like not wanting to hit the pegs if the pegs were never there? And I don't know, but like you go back in the year in Carlin and look at,
which is our child,
which is our, our dad did all these like videos of us as kids and would turn them into these awesome family movies. And they were called the year in Carlin, but you can see shots of the kitchen from like when we were kids. And it's just like, there's no pegs back there. And I'm like, I don't know, but It's not just that I think they were there. It's that I have like rationale surrounding my memory of them. Like that's why I remember them. But they weren't there, apparently.
Apparently.
So it's just like I don't know. I don't know about it. It's like I have to believe Mom because there's video evidence and she probably knows what was in the kitchen better than me.
Right, yeah, considering
as the adult.
Yeah. Like her house.
I know. I'm like, was there like a day when something was like hung there that I'm remembering? Or I don't know.
Yeah, the only other thing I can think is that like halfway through the kitchen on the left-hand side, there was like a set of cabinets where like all the Tupperware and stuff like that was stored. It is entirely possible we could have just like run into that. It was like mounted.
Yeah,
you did have to
do a little bit of like a side swerve maneuver when you got to the kitchen to like, because when you got in, the chairs were on your right and there was more space on the left. But then at some point, the cabinets got in the way and you had to like veer off to the right.
Drift.
You know, you had to drift, man. There's no doubt. Oh, man. Yeah. But like, here's the other thing is that at one point, our parents, like they redid the wallpaper in the kitchen.
Yes. They
right.
Did.
And that is when I remember the pegs disappearing because it was like, now they no longer matched. And so you can see the old wallpaper in the kitchen and no pegs in the video. So
it must have not been there. It must have been Dogzilla the whole time.
It must have been Dogzilla the whole time, but it was Catzilla, Ben. I know it was Catzilla.
It does make more sense with all the tiny little mice.
I know!
Unless for some reason you just really gravitated towards Cat Kong.
And
it was like part of the Dogzilla franchise.
There's no way. There's no way. I've never heard of Cat Kong until today.
Until today.
And there's no way. I remember Catzilla. And unless like as a kid, I was like, it bothered me that it wasn't Catzilla because it was mice or something. Like,
so both Dogzilla and Cat Kong have little mice featured in them.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But it's so frustrating. I don't know. It's like, I'm clearly wrong and I'm like arguing against nothing. Cause there's no way to prove that it was Catzilla.
That you saw it any other way.
And I'm like, no, it was that way. I know it was that way. It had to be but it's not. I don't know what to do. It's like so hard to accept it. It feels like if I accepted it, like so much of my memory is a lie or something.
Okay, now I'm wondering if memory recall is actually just like a lesson in overall like building confidence. And the more that you remember something and the more that you remember something correctly, the more that you believe you can remember something correctly, which means the more that you like actively take in information for the sake of remembering.
Mm-hmm.
And now that you've had this like tiny ounce of doubt fractured into that foundation.
It's like, yeah.
It's like will knows? It cause the whole house of cards to fall?
Hopefully not.
I know. Gosh, I can't. I don't know what I'm going to do if you can't remember things anymore because I pretty much count on you for that at all times.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Do you know, maybe I'm misremembering this.
Oh, dear.
But as a child, my childhood friends used to like, I feel like this was like a thing they used to like tease me about was like not having a good memory. Like that I would forget things or
this
I was forgetful. Yeah. And I was just like, I'm like, it's always so funny to me as like an adult that people like think of my memory as being really, really good. And I'm like, no, I don't. It's so funny because people for so long told me I had a bad memory. And like, it's like, so part of me is like, I can't believe you that I have a good memory because I was told as a kid that I didn't. So
imposter syndrome can really it can find its way into just about every nook and cranny of our existence.
Yeah, right.
regardless of what it is.
I know. Anyway, so hopefully I do have a good memory for most things, but apparently I'm misremembering Catzilla. Unless I'm not, please someone else say they remember Catzilla.
Goodness gracious.
Like, I need confirmation that the simulation, I would rather the simulation be real than me have misremembered this. You know?
It's like weird. It's like, wow. Right, wow, that's wow, it. Wow.
I need to prove the Matrix is real now so that I can be correct about Godzilla.
Okay, this needs to be the plot of our eventual book.
Yeah.
Is literally like, well, there's no way we remember wrong. So therefore, we're going to spend the rest of our lives proving that we are, in fact, just binary bits.
Exactly. There you go. Okay. That's it.
That's it. Transition.
Transition. Popcorn culture is supported by Arena Club. Okay, so you guys know that I love trading card games and that me and Ben are big time collectors of Pokemon cards. You know, it's that childhood fantasy of finally being able to use adult money to buy those highly coveted rares of our youth. And like, even in our office, we have not one, but two full display cases with some of our all time favorite rarest cards that we've pulled. But something I did not know existed when I was a kid in my youth was the grading process for trading cards or sports cards or whatever you're collecting. You know, to me it was just like a rare Charizard is a rare Charizard. Like, it doesn't matter if it's been hanging out in my pocket with my lucky paperclip. Turns out it does matter, and kind of a lot, because if you get your cards professionally graded, it can add huge value. And then not only that, but once they're graded, they will like seal them in that pristine condition inside of a plastic case, or what's known in the industry as a slab. And that's where Arena Club steps in, because it's like buying a booster pack, but it's for a pre-graded card. Now, I know that can take like maybe a second to wrap your head around, because you're opening physical cards on a digital platform, which means you open the pack online and see your pulls where they can be added to your showroom for the world to see. But you can also request them to be sent to you at any time. So they have got a ton of pre-graded cards, and then you will get to randomly open one, and then they'll keep it for you, or they can send it to you, or you can just like sell it or trade it online or whatever you want to do. But whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform you have got to check out. And right now you can get 10% off your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/poppop, which, wow, that is a crazy offer. 10% off a $400 slab pack. That's like $40 right there. Anyway, that's arenaclub.com/poppop for 10% off your first purchase.
Popcorn Culture is sponsored by Shopify. Y'all are likely aware of the fact that we have our very own Shopify store, Carlin Brothers Mercantile, and it's hard to imagine not having it now, but arriving at the decision to open our own web store was a big one. In fact, we started our journey on the interweb back in 2012 and didn't finally open up shop until 2018. And a huge part of that is just not knowing where to start, but that's where Shopify steps in. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, which is a fancy way of saying it's a really easy and effective way to start an online business, no matter if you're operating out of your garage or have like a whole building or three or something. Once we were set up, our biggest concern was trying a new product, only to discover no one was interested in it. But Shopify is powered with so many reports, more than you can even imagine. And this is so handy because it allows us to use data to better provide what folks are actually interested in. It's so easy to use, but even if you do find yourself caught in a jam, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/poppop. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/poppop now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/poppop.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, Ben, how about a corny joke?
Hey, lay it on me.
All right, dude, Ben, Why did the tomato turn red?
Because hundreds of years ago, its ancestor summoned the powers of the red panda in order to become a red panda in order to defend its town.
Wow, solid guess, solid guess. The answer to why did the tomato turn red is because it saw the salad dressing. It's so bad.
It's really
it's
not
so bad.
It's really not good.
It's really not good.
Oh man.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, quick anecdote. So for Christmas, Alice and I discovered last year that we really enjoyed gardening together. We had our garden in the backyard. Yeah. We made some vlogs about it and such, and it was really good fun. And as the cold weather came around, I think we were like both really disappointed that we no longer had the ability to bond over gardening, because you really can't do it at all in the winter.
Difficult.
And so for Christmas, she got me this like hydroponic little garden kit, which like literally like you set on our dining room counter, and it has like a light built in, and it like just circulates water, and you fill it up, you know, like once or twice a week. And then it has like the nutrients that you pour in like once every 2 weeks. It's very simple, but it was really cool. You like drop these like little tubes in, and then they literally grow into like tomato plants.
Nice.
Or herbs or whatever. Yeah. And it's been so fun, because I think through like the winter months, it was like we were like literally like standing at our counter, like staring at these like tiny little buds that were coming up. We're like, oh my gosh, we're gonna have like fresh tomatoes. Like, how cool. And the really funny thing, I guess, sort of funny thing, is that like, I do not think I can mark myself a picky eater. I don't think I'm a picky eater, but maybe no picky eaters think are picky eaters. But
I think people there are people who certainly identify as picky eaters.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I for most of my life, I've tried and tried and tried, and I just don't like tomatoes very much.
Yeah.
I don't know why. But Alice loves them. And at the end of the day, really what I liked was watching the plant grow and like, you know, prosper and be healthy and everything.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, that's really cool and fun and everything. And one of the things that we ran into is that for some reason or another, and I'm like, I don't know if it's like the hydroponic or if it's like the nutrients that you're feeding it, but apparently the tomatoes are just truly awful.
What?
Yeah. So
no, they're not good.
They're not good at all.
Man.
So I set it up like the day after Christmas, and probably like a month ago, we got like our first like batch of like tomatoes or whatever. And so like they've been like popping up, and you know, we've had like a whole bunch of them and everything. And like Addie loves tomatoes, and so like, you know, she'll be sitting there and like, you know, she'll like reach for one. So like we'll pluck one and give it to her, and she'll like put it in her mouth and be like,
no.
Just like completely spit it out. Like Allie won't eat them at all. And like Allie will like sit down with like a little carton of like cherry tomatoes and just like eat them.
Just pop them in.
Like the whole container.
Right.
Like that's just like a snack for her.
Normal.
She'll just do that.
Yeah.
And I have no idea why. And so like this is like one of those things where I'm like, I'm so curious. It's like, is there something about the dirt, the great outdoors, that makes like grown vegetables tastier?
Right.
And this is almost like the lab grown version of them, and it's like you really just can't replicate the outside.
I mean the outside
is the outside for a reason.
It feels there's got to be a reason why your tomatoes don't taste good, and it could have to do with the dirt, or like maybe it's your particular strand of tomatoes or something. But a lot of people put down just like, you know, like new soil to plant stuff in anyway, so like it's not like you couldn't go buy some soil from the store and do that, so which would accommodate the dirt problem, I suppose.
Well, there is no dirt for hydroponics.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's the thing. So you're literally, all the roots are just growing in water.
Oh, yeah.
Right, so there's like a basin of circulating water, and then you add nutrients from like a little container.
Mm. So you're like, oh, you're adding in the nutrients instead of the roots getting the nutrients from the dirt.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, that's got to be the problem.
Yeah, I think
there's
no way.
It's
like, it's so funny to me though, because like the plants are so healthy, and they're really like robust, and they smell amazing.
This is the difference between like getting all of your vitamins from a pill in the morning versus eating the foods and getting the vitamins from the foods.
From the foods itself.
Yeah, this almost feels like exactly like that.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not like that won't work, and clearly the tomatoes are growing, but also you should probably just eat the whole foods.
Yeah. So anyway, I planted them in the dirt.
Did you?
So that's my experiment.
Oh,
so
man. Hopefully they come out better.
I know. I was like, we have an entire like tomato bush on our dining room, or on our kitchen counter
now. This is disappointing. I wonder, maybe tomatoes are just, so like, did you grow anything else? Like, did you do like,
we did like mint, basil.
What are the seasoning? What am I trying to
herbs?
Say? Herbs. Do the herbs taste normal.
The herbs do taste normal.
Okay, they're
a lot better. Yeah. So we've made like some cocktails with the mint, and we've made like bruschetta with the basil, and
but not also, with the tomatoes.
but not with the tomatoes. No way. Yeah, they're like Allie like will not eat them.
This is fascinating to me.
I know.
So that is interesting because when we were at your house for Easter, I saw your hydroponic setup on your table, and Beth saw it too, and she was like, "Oh my god, I want one of these. It looks so cool. This looks like so much fun." And Beth also loves tomatoes.
Yes.
So I shall have to report back. Like, I have like put it in like my back pocket as like, that'd be such a great gift to get her for like her birthday or Christmas or something.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
I've been resting on that. And now as I'm hearing you tell the story, I'm like, it's not going to work. Now it's obviously a bad gift because it doesn't produce good tomatoes.
I know. Well, that's
why. But if it does good herbs, that is perhaps still worthwhile.
Definitely does good herbs. And it is a lot of fun to watch them grow up. And I also just think that like we've talked a lot about like our like weird and growing obsession with like plants.
Yeah.
Like I do just think that they make your home happier.
Yeah.
So
I would like to grow some food at my or like do some like vegetable gardening at my own house. I know.
I can help you with that.
Oh, please do. Come on over. We can rip up the back corner of the yard and plant some stuff. It'll be great.
That's going to be amazing.
Honestly, you can come over on Saturday if you want. That'd be super good.
I'm looking forward to this plan already.
All right. All right, cool.
We'll report back on how Jay's garden is going.
I know. I'm like, what do I want to grow? Part of me has been leaning towards like, do you remember as kids growing watermelons?
We tried to.
Did that succeed?
I think it did not succeed.
Okay. All right. Maybe I shouldn't do watermelons.
We grew pumpkins successfully.
Yeah, we did do that.
Okay. Although, this was like one of those things. I can't remember if we talked about this or not, but we had our pumpkin patch last year that I think I talked about several times and maybe showed it in my vlog. I can't remember. But like we had thrown away the pumpkins that had literally rotted on our front porch from the Halloween prior.
Oh, right.
Because it was when we brought Addison home from the hospital, where she was born on October 26th. You know, they were out there for Halloween and everything.
Yeah.
And we were just like in full blown new parent mode. And like I didn't rake the leaves that year. Like nothing happened outside. Like we were just like, you know, trying so hard just to like make it. And so the pumpkins basically just like melted into like muck, you know, on the front porch. And eventually I was like, okay, well, I have to go and fix this. So I literally went with a shovel, scooped it, and walked it over to my compost heap, threw it into the compost heap, where I just honestly assumed it would disintegrate into even more nothingness and just not be a problem anymore.
Right.
And that was the end of that. And then we plant our whole garden. And like one day I'm walking past it and I'm like, wait a second, what is this plant? I didn't plant this plant. What is happening right here? It looks so healthy and happy. And it turned out that one of the pumpkin seeds from the rotten tomatoes took and grew into this like massive, like 200 foot long
pumpkin vine.
Yeah. And
it's not really that surprising because like, you know, after the pumpkin matter broke down, I assume the seeds were all just great. And like a single pumpkin has like, you know, like 200 seeds, if not more.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Not to mention, it's also where I put all of like the leftover leaves and yard matter.
You're
and
putting it in like a compost heap, the goal of which is to grow stuff in. So like, yeah.
It's in like supreme soil.
Yeah.
Yeah. Super healthy. Definitely nothing like hydroponic water.
Yeah. No, nothing
way
like
better,
that.
Way
yeah,
better.
Definitely.
But anyway, so they ended up growing. And one of the big things that Allie and I kept talking about was like plucking them, and because they were green for so long.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, they'll turn orange. Like I was like, when we were kids, we grew pumpkins in the backyard. And I remember we harvested them early. We brought them into the, like dad's basement where like the bike shop was.
Yeah.
And we set them on the counter and we came back a few months later and they were all orange.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is what happens to pumpkins.
Yeah.
And then we started reading into it and it's not what happens to pumpkins.
No.
And I was like, did dad go and buy three new pumpkins?
No.
Is it possible?
No, I don't remember them needing to turn orange. I just remember them just being orange.
Well,
maybe I remember like two of them being orange and one of them being like half green.
Well, maybe it was mine that was half green. I thought it was going to look all lousy out there. And all of a sudden it was bright orange.
I don't know.
This is my headcanon that has to be.
All right.
Otherwise my child is a lie. Catzilla.
Pumpkins turn orange and Catzilla is real. Confirmed.
Confirmed. Yes. Otherwise the Matrix must be.
Yeah.
Anyway. So long story long on that one is do pumpkins turn from green to orange after they've been plucked? Also, would you grow pumpkins? I feel like that would be messy.
I have thought about pumpkins as well, specifically because like, yeah, as kids, I remember growing the pumpkins. And I remember the fun thing about growing pumpkins is they have these tiny little vines on them.
Yes, they
do. And they would like wrap themselves around like a blade of grass, and you could go take the vine off the blade of grass and then watch it redo it. And it was like so cool to me that you could like, you never think of plants as being really in motion that much. But this was like a thing where you could like watch a plant move, which doesn't happen that often.
Right.
I just thought that was super fun that it would just like wrap itself around a little piece of grass there, just like grabbing on.
I know.
I was like, I'm not going anywhere. And that was always cool. So I've thought about that as well. But those are less harvestable and you can't like eat them as much.
Sure.
So I've been trying to think exactly what I asked Luke if we could grow something, what we should get. And he said corn. And I was like, that's not bad. We don't have a ton of room for corn. It feels like when I think of corn, I think of like a field of corn or like rows. And this would be like, you know, not that much room for that.
Like 12 feet.
Yeah. And I'm like, yeah. So I'm like, maybe not corn. Then like Beth likes tomatoes, which would probably work, but like I don't like tomatoes. So I want something that like I can eat too.
Oh yeah, naturally. You know? Yeah.
So I've been sort of maybe leaning towards like peppers or something.
Oh, peppers are good.
Yeah, because peppers feel like, yeah, people successfully grow peppers. I don't think they're like that high maintenance and they'll just grow and they'll just do their thing. And that would, yeah, people, then I can eat them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe peppers is what I'm thinking. Or potatoes are good. That's a good like thing with the kids too. You go dig them up.
Yeah. Hey, yeah. Nothing like getting in the dirt.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Well, maybe I can do potatoes in one corner and peppers in another.
Welcome to Carlin Brothers Gardening.
Yeah. Welcome. Here we go. Let's go. Because last summer, if you'll recall, I tried to do sunflowers, and that just had, this is my other thing, like whatever I grow, I'm like, I'm just like, it's probably just gonna get eaten by the animals and that would be no good, then I'd be all upset. But if you grow like spicy peppers, they feel like they're unnatural deterrent because like the animals don't want them, right? Because well, yeah. They're hot.
Okay, so one of my favorite things about Addie right now is that like she doesn't have a great baseline for when something's going to be spicy.
Sure.
And so like we'll like order like Indian food or something like that. And sometimes it is a little bit spicier. And so like if you give her like a piece of the Indian food, which she does very much like,
yeah,
it only depends on like if they mix the batch. Like there's not a whole lot of like consistency to the intensity of heat from our Indian place. Sometimes it's like scorch your mouth.
Yeah.
And other times it's just like completely mild.
Right.
And so we did give her Indian one night, and when she ate it, she just stuck out her tongue and like clawed her tongue. Like, I was like,
Addie.
What a sad way to try to get rid of the spice. Yeah.
This didn't work. Yeah.
Hot. Hot.
Man, I remember taking Luke to an Indian restaurant when he was like 1 year old. And we said, yeah, we got like extremely mild everything because we wanted him to be able to try it. And we just got like chicken tikka masala and he loved it.
Yes.
Like, was like literally just eating the sauce with a spoon, had it all over him. It was just like, so yeah, that was so fun. Then it was like, he was like, oh, Luke will always love chicken tikka masala. And it's like, now I think if I got it for him, he'd be like, no, I don't want this. And you know, whatever. Like, no, I know you like it because I watched you spoonful mouthfuls of sauce into your face.
I've seen it.
I know it.
I know more than you.
I remember. Okay.
The pigs. Godzilla.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's all coming full circle today,
isn't
it?
It's all coming. It's all about memory, man.
It really is.
It's all about memory. Goodness me.
So speaking of spring, I feel like you're in like J heaven, I feel like, at the moment, because spring cleaning is the foot.
Yeah, no doubt.
How is that going for you?
Oh man, yeah. So yesterday morning, we spent a good portion of the day, not just morning. Doing some cleaning in the boys' rooms.
Oh boy. Yeah.
Well, it's all like this weird, like it is weird how like one project requires you sometimes to like backtrack into like several other things to get it ready.
Okay.
Like I think about this all the time, like in the evening when I'm like cleaning up after dinner, where it'll be like, okay, all I really have to do is clear the table so that and put the stuff in the dishwasher. But sometimes there will still be stuff that we didn't take out of the dishwasher from when we ran it last night. Like no one's emptied it for the day yet. Right. And so it's like, okay, so I got to empty this. But actually, before I can empty the dishwasher, I need to empty the drying rack because there's some things that will be in there that are going to need to go in there. So it's like this weird, like, okay, all I really need to do is clear the table, but actually that's going to involve me emptying the drying rack, then emptying the dishwasher, then putting all the dishes that are already dirty from the day into the dishwasher, then I can get to the table.
Right.
And it's like you have to like backtrack all these like things just to do this one otherwise simple task. So The real task I'm trying to get to is potty training Nick and Nate.
Got it. Okay.
Right?
Came out of left field.
But it came out of left field, right? So that is what we're aiming for. That's like we're getting there. And we've started like sitting them on the potty some, like getting them used to it. We're reading them like the potty books and stuff. But it's like part of potty training means like once they make the transition, they need to be able to have, they need to not be in cribs, because if they're in cribs, then they cannot get out of bed to go to the potty.
Got it.
Right.
Yep,
so
yep.
Part of potty training means getting rid of the cribs.
Okay.
Right. So we have the beds that we are going to put in their room.
This is
in
like
the house.
More layers than an onion. Right.
I know. Yeah. So like we have the beds we're going to do, and they require assembly. And it's like, okay, but I want to put the beds in there because we need the beds to be in there before they're potty trained.
Right.
But in order to put the beds up there, I need to like move these giant heavy boxes from the garage and from the living room up to their room. But I really can't even put them in the room while the room is messy. And I really can't even like, and not only that, but we need to take the cribs out of the room because they will be in the way and you can't get them out of the door the way it is. Like they're too big to fit through the door.
Right.
So like in order to potty train the kids, first it means I need to completely clean their room so that I can disassemble their cribs, so that I can take the cribs downstairs, so I can move the other beds upstairs, assemble them, and have the beds ready so that they can be potty trained.
Right. You know? Yes.
And
yes,
it's
yes,
like
yes.
So this was like really step one of getting the rooms ready for the disassembly. And all that has to be like in one day too. It's not like, because once you disassemble the cribs, you must build the beds
that
same day.
You are now fully committed.
Because
yes.
Otherwise, they don't have anywhere to sleep. So there's that. That's my big long-term project. And it's like, this is so many steps involved. And so we were just cleaning up, the twins and Luke's room this past weekend. And it's like it's one of these things where like Luke will have quiet time in his room every day. And it's like, he plays with all the toys and it's great. But sometimes you come into his room and it is just like overwhelming how much mess he's managed to make in the act of playing. It's like, I can't even stand. There's like a room where the door opens and then like along that line, there's just like a wall of toys. It's like, I can't even step in the room. And Luke likes to make like lots of little like arts and crafts and drawings and things. So there'll be just like, but he'll draw on something and just decide that's good enough and move on to the next one. So they'll just be like partially drawn on scraps of paper all over the place and like just bits like, glow sticks that were working, but now are just dead glow sticks. And it reminded me a lot of like in Harry Potter when he's going to clean his trunk in Deathly Hallows and he's just sort of got that like mulch.
Like layer of
detritus. Yeah, the layer of mulch. Yeah. Like that sort of stuff is just sort of like made its way all the way through the room. And it's just like, so we spent a long time cleaning both rooms and moving some toys from upstairs into the new places and clearing out space. But it is amazing to me. Like once it was all done, like when you walk into the room, it like you literally can breathe. It's just like, I will walk in and I feel like lighter.
I can see the weight off your shoulders.
It is tremendous.
I can feel your sense of calm.
Yeah. So hopefully it'll be interesting going forward because we took like so much stuff out. And so often I feel like the problem is like his room, like your room gets so messy because you have so much stuff to make a mess with. But if there's not enough stuff to make even a big mess with, then it can only get so messy, right?
This is true.
Right?
It seems true.
Yeah.
So do you have a philosophy when it comes to like the nostalgia attached to any of these in particular items? Like you like pick something, you're up and you're like, this is a good drawing of like Ariel from like when he went to Disney and like met Ariel and like was into like his like Little Mermaid face. It's like, do we keep it?
Yeah, no, I don't have a ton of it. If it's just like a coloring sheet from like a coloring book or something,
right?
Then probably not too attached to it. If it was something like the Ariel, maybe.
Okay.
There was that little, I'm sure you remember me reading the story he dictated to me one day.
Yes.
I still keep that. I kept that sheet of paper because I was like, this was so adorable. I want to like frame this,
That's amazing.
Such a fun one.
Yep.
So we kept that, but there, a lot of it's just like, scrap, scribble, paper, stuff like that.
Okay.
So yeah, I'm not too attached to it.
Okay.
That much. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a very interesting. I remember when we were kids growing up, and I've actually frequently thought that this would be like a good regular thing to get into while they're young. But like when we went to elementary school, we would have like a pizza box.
Yeah, like that, a portfolio.
Like a portfolio pizza box. Yeah. And I remember for, I wonder if mom and dad still have, maybe not. But like, I remember for a long time, you could go into like their basement and you could see like our stack of like Ben in kindergarten, Ben in first grade, Ben in second grade. And it was just like all of my pizza boxes.
Yeah.
With like my various, you know, like finger paintings or, you know, like Christmas like card that I made or like a Mother's Day something, you know,
right.
They put all of like the little things in there for you to keep in like a safe place forever and ever and ever. And they're like, they're fun to go back and look back, but I also have no idea. Like I feel like I am oddly like not very, given the fact that I feel like our whole job revolves around like delving into our nostalgia.
Yeah.
I don't know that I'm like actually the most nostalgic person when it comes to stuff like that. Like,
yeah,
I don't I mean, a big attachment to them.
It's it's curious what would you would like decide you wanted to keep. Cause it's like, if I looked at stuff I made in like kindergarten now, like I don't think I would even remember having made it.
Right.
You know, like I don't know what effect it would have on me as an adult to be like, oh, I had this or something. Like I can see where if you were the parent and like you helped the kid make it and there was something like you guys did together, like that would seem maybe more like, yeah, I would want to remember this.
Sure.
Like maybe just as the parent, but like, I mean, Luke will come home from school like every day with a new craft they made.
Right.
You know, and it's like, I don't feel like this is going to be meaningful even by next week.
Sure. <you know? laughs> Sure.
No, so
that's fair. That's fair.
It's, okay. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Mm-hmm. We do have like a portfolio like thing where if there are things we want to keep, we will put them in there.
The permanent record.
Yeah. Yeah. The permanent record. Yeah. No, not so much, but
man, why was that such a thing? I don't even know. I'm sure we talked about this before, but like when we were kids, I feel like permanent record was like in every cartoon, every TV show, every like piece of messaging ever was like, it'll go on your permanent record.
Yeah. And I want to say it was very much in the show, Doug, the assistant principal. That was like his catchphrase.
Okay.
Almost. Yeah. I think that is what generated a lot of it, but also like, I don't even know what that. Yeah. Like what was that supposed to mean? But
yeah. What is the permanent record? Does that exist out there somewhere now? Can you look up my permanent record?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think it's like a real thing.
I would love to know what was inside of it.
Yeah.
It'd be so interesting to go back and be like were there any moments? Cause like every moment I ever got in trouble in middle school and high school and everything, my suspicion is that I would have a very vivid memory of it because it was like not a frequent occasion. So it usually meant that like whenever I did mess up, I usually messed up pretty big in like a way that was kind of like, oh yeah, there's no getting that out of my brain.
It would not surprise me if like your school had like, you know, a manila folder per child, and anytime you like had to be written up by like the nurse or you got in trouble or something, they just put that piece of paper in that folder
that way like you could see like a pattern of behavior.
Yeah, maybe you could make like a pattern of behavior, but I can see that maybe transferring up from like your elementary school to your high school or something, but I cannot see it existing past high school,
right,
in like any sort of meaningful way that could like come back to haunt you as an adult outside of things that were like so bad as to have involved like the actual law,
right,
or something.
Yeah. But I could, like, could we call our high school and be like, do you have it?
Can I come could you hunt down your permanent record?
Can I hunt down my permanent record?
Can I get the manila folder, please? I doubt it.
Man, if I could get it, I would read everybody what was on it.
Oh my gosh.
It'd be so interesting.
Mine would be so boring. You know,
just nothing at all.
No information
whatsoever.
Not very much. I can't imagine. Yeah. I'd be surprised if there was a lot of information about me in there.
That's like part of you, like what I want to know is like, what did your teachers have to say about
what you? That would be so interesting. Like, no, you can't have it. Like, you kept a record of me that I am not allowed to see.
Right. Yeah.
I am not allowed to see it.
My own permanent
record. My own stuff. Yeah. Like, come on. Why wouldn't you have access to it?
I don't know. Anyway. So interesting things. Yeah. What would be on your permanent record? Be sure to let us know. Otherwise, guys, as ever, thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode of The Pop. We did want to give you a fun, new, exciting update for our $10 tier over on Patreon, which now features a ad-free listening experience.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So if you would like to get a feed of The Pop that doesn't have any ads baked into it or anything whatsoever, you can do so at patreon.com/popcornculture. Also, you have until the end of the month of May. Is how many months? How many days? January, February, March, April, May. 31 days in May. I do the knuckle thing. It's the only way I can remember.
Dude, that is. I always see people do it, and I can never remember which. Like I know that it alternates based on the knuckles, but I also can't remember which knuckles mean 31 and which like indents don't. Well, I guess. February is probably a good anchor.
That is the anchor for me. Yeah. So it's mostly just like January is like the top one. So 31.
So all the peaks must be 31s.
Yes. Yep. So January, February, March, April. Yep. Anyway, so you have until May 31st if you'd like to get in on the quarterly merch for Q2 of 2023.
Yeah.
There's a whole bunch of numbers and words and stuff. As a reminder, that's going to be one of the one of our all-time favorite coffee mugs. It's made by a company called Deneen. Each individual mug is handmade, like individually hand thrown and spun by like an actual potter. They are going to be like a mint color with the popcorn culture emblem right in the middle. They are already in production and there is a limited number. So if that's something that you're on the fence about and want to get in on, just be sure to again, head on over to patreon.com/popcornculture and select the exclusive quarterterly merch tier.
Yeah.
Otherwise guys, as ever, if you have any feedback, you can send it over to popcornculturepod@gmail.com. And until next time,
pop.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.